Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 7 of the Seven Lakes podcast. I'm Davey, an AV production student here at Seven Lakes, and today we have Trey running the soundboard. As we all know, the last 2 to 3 years have been kind of crazy, primarily because of the COVID-19 virus and its effects. So joining us today to discuss student resilience and stamina in academics is our campus certified school psychologist, Ms. Piccolo. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So our first question is, what is one of the areas of mental health you feel are the most relevant for us to be aware of?
So mental health encompasses so many different areas, but I think I'd like to spend the morning talking with you really about resiliency and kind of what that is and how we can build it in ourselves. And so resiliency is really kind of how well we can bounce back from something. And so as teenagers, you guys are constantly building your academic resiliency, your cognitive resiliency, your physical resiliency if you're doing athletics, but there's not that much focus on your emotional resiliency. And really that is something that's really important for us just as humans in general.
Yeah. Okay. So how would you suggest we go about building resiliency?
There's lots of different ways to build up our resiliency. I think one of the biggest ways to do it is making sure that our basic needs are being met. And so in psychology, there's something known as Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And on the bottom of that is our physiological needs. And I think one of the things that I'm constantly talking to students about is how much sleep you all are getting. Because often teenagers in particular are getting way less than they really need to function well. And so on typical night, how much sleep are you getting?
That's a good question. Probably not enough. I'm up pretty late doing homework.
Yeah. And so do you know how much sleep you're supposed to get as a teenager?
I think it's 8 hours.
Actually 9 1/4 is kind of ideal, 9 to 10 hours. And I think the vast majority of our student body doesn't get that, and maybe even our faculty as well. Which is natural because when we turn about 10 years old is when our sleep patterns start to change and our rhythms shift to later. So there's a reason you guys stay up later and aren't tired earlier, but sleep is really, really important. It impacts the part of our brain that controls our emotions and lets us regulate our emotions called the amygdala. I'm not going to get super neuroscience-y on you guys because that's not my field. But sleep is so important, and really making sure you're getting the right amount of sleep on a consistent basis really helps you with kind of functioning and functioning with your emotions. So that physiological piece is really, really important. Another area is really just self-care in general, and that looks different for different people. The biggest part of self-care is those basic needs, right? But then really knowing what you need as an individual to be better. And so I'm naturally an introvert, and so I need my alone time to kind of re-energize, exercise, things like that. But really that self-care piece.
That's a really interesting point you bring up, because I feel like a lot of these things are something that students sacrifice, like in the name of academics. Mm-hmm. Like I know personally, I don't get a lot of sleep because I'm up late doing homework, or maybe time I would take to do self-care is time that I'm using to do like something instead, like school related. So how do you usually propose that students find that balance?
Yeah, and the balance is tricky. And it's tricky throughout life because your priorities change and your needs change. But one thing that's really important for you all to figure out for yourselves is what are your personal boundaries? And so what are you willing to sacrifice for one thing over the next? Academics are important. I'm not going to say they're not important, but you're important as well. And how well you take care of yourself is going to reflect on how well you can actually do with your academics. And so it's setting boundaries just for your personal self. Say, I'm going to do this over this. But then also social boundaries. I know there's a lot of pressure to be hanging out with friends or doing certain things. And it's okay to say no. I constantly tell my boys, use me as the excuse. Say, mom won't let you do it. Things like that. But being able to set your boundaries and knowing that it's okay to say no sometimes is going to be really important.
One thing I was wondering about is, do you think there's a way to like identify good self-care habits versus like more negative ones? Like, for example, I know like having a cup of coffee, for example, can be like self-care if it's something that you enjoy drinking. But if you're maybe drinking coffee to replace like getting enough sleep, and then that becomes like a more negative thing. So how do you kind of recognize when you're doing that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think it's all in moderation, right? So we have to look at our habits and we have to look at why we're doing them. And so enjoying a cup of coffee in the morning might be part of your routine, and having a routine is an important part of self-care. But if it's becoming a crutch or to replace something else that's also a need, such as sleep, then it can turn into an unhealthy habit for sure. And I think another thing that is really important with self-care is having self-compassion and having grace for yourself. As humans, it's natural for us to compare ourselves to others and to see kind of the outside picture of what people are going through. But sometimes the outside doesn't always reflect the inside. And so having compassion for yourself, knowing, you know what, I'm having a hard time right now, but I'm going to get through this. And then also having compassion for others. And that can be really hard sometimes when you're feeling really down and struggling a lot, seeing that maybe somebody else is as well.
Something that reminded me of is like, if you go around and you look at the water fountains, you can see things that are like, you are not your GPA, mm-hmm. Or poses to that similar effect. And I feel like that falls into self-compassion. But when you're at like a really high academically performing school, you know, where rankings become such a big deal and stuff like that, do you find that students who go to these kinds of schools or who are at like a higher level academically tend to struggle more with self-compassion?
I think so. I think because that comparison is so high, right? And I think self-compassion is really hard. Anxiety levels are really high. And so it's really dialing it all back and looking again at what's most important for you. And remembering high school is really just a blink in your entire life. And yes, it's important, but you want to also make sure you're not missing out on important memories because you're so hyper-focused on that number being the GPA.
So when you notice people around you like struggling, what's the best way to kind of like reach out or try and assist?
I think always letting somebody know that you're there or that you see them. You know, I grew up in a family of helpers. We just naturally want to help people. And something my dad told me when I was really young that is kind of one of the guiding principles of my life is never be afraid to smile at somebody. It might be the only smile they get that day. And so something as little as a smile can really go a long way in somebody feeling that they're being seen or heard. And also being comfortable with quiet and silence. And sometimes people just need another person to sit with them quietly, without all the chatter and the chit-chat.
Something else I wanted to ask about, I guess in previous years, like mental health has been a topic that is like extremely stigmatized. And I think a lot of people still struggle with that, mm-hmm. even like if not them personally, then the people around them. So what do you think there's a way to like push past that stigma?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And I think over the last few years, mental health has really been out in the public a lot more than it's ever really been. I think, you know, a few years ago in the Olympics, we saw a lot of the athletes, Simone Biles, Michael Phelps, really being open about kind of mental health and putting it in the forefront of the news. And then, of course, with the pandemic, mental health has been a huge, huge topic around. But there still is a stigma, unfortunately. But mental health is physical health, and it has a lot to do with kind of how our brain functions and brain runs.
And if a student wanted to like reach out for resources, how would they, like, would they come to you, or is there a certain way they'd do that?
There's lots of different resources here on campus. And so I'm one of the school psychologists. We have another one who's here twice a week. We share her with Seven Lakes Junior High, Miss Blakely Cosser. But really your counselors are your first line of defense for mental health resources. They are terrific with all thing mental health. Your staff and faculty are good supports as well. So there's lots of different resources here on campus for sure.
Okay, sounds great. Thank you so much. So we'll open up some questions to our audience if anyone has any.
Hi, my name is Nicole, and I have a question. For people who struggle with sleep, is there any like kind of strategies to help with that?
Yeah, that's a great question, Nicole. I think one of the first things you should do when you're trying to figure out how to sleep better is really recognize when you need to wake up. And so as high schoolers, you guys during the week have a natural time limit of when you need to wake up to get to school on time, being an early start, and then dial that back with how many hours of sleep you need. So say if you're waking up at 6 o'clock and you're ideally wanting 9 hours of sleep, that's a 9 p.m. bedtime, which I doubt any of you guys are actually getting. And so 9 hours is ideal, but I work with students who are getting 3 or 4 hours a night, which is not good. So trying to get as close to that ideal time to go to bed is the first step. And then looking at kind of your situation, your environment for sleeping. Do you have your phone with you? Are you scrolling through things? Are you chit-chatting? Screens can really impact and keep our brain awake as much as we hate to admit it. Are you reading a book? Trying to find routines for you. Again, routines are so important in self-care, but routines for you that help you actually decompress, but also start to wind down and turn off. I know personally for me, if I'm struggling to sleep, I have some chamomile tea and things like that. And I leave my phone in the kitchen. Lights out, phone in the kitchen. Less distractions are the better.
All right. I'm Trey. I'm currently running the soundboard. I have a question on the self-comparison thing. I've struggled with that too, and I know some of my friends have. Is there like a good way to combat that at all?
Yeah, like I said, it's human nature to compare ourselves to others, right? We kind of put ourselves in different groups and at different levels. And I think looking at what you value as a person is a place to start. Like, who do you really want to be for yourself versus others? And then reminding yourself of that. The other piece is that compassion for others. So realizing that the outside that you see on other people might not really be what's going on for them. Because we all have mental health and we all have ups and downs and things like that. So reminding yourself you're not the only one feeling a certain way. And looking at kind of your own personal goals in life.
Hi, I'm Gianna, and I have a question about the effect of social media. How does it affect people, or has it affected people that you've seen?
Yeah, social media is a huge topic for mental health. It kind of goes back to that comparison, right? And us comparing ourselves to others. I'm going to age myself a bit, but I was in the initial Facebook group. It came out when I was in college, and I do not envy you all. You've grown up with social media kind of your entire lives, so you don't know any different. But I think there's some positives to social media about spreading awareness and having things in the limelight. But I think a lot of what you guys see on social media, unfortunately, is not reality. But it's presented to you in a way that it is reality, or it seems like it should be reality. And so for me personally, I think social media has been pretty detrimental to mental health overall.
Okay, so I know we've been talking a lot about like mental health on kind of like the lower self-esteem side, like the self-comparison, self-compassion. But I'm curious about is, have you ever noticed somebody who's on like the opposite end of the spectrum? Like maybe, I don't know how to say this without sounding mean, but like maybe like an overinflated sense of self-confidence, or like maybe a sense of importance that causes them to be like cruel or misunderstanding to others?
Yes. So that's got a lot of different parts to it, right? And so there are definitely people who have high self-confidence and high self-esteem. When it gets to a point where maybe they're looking down on others or being mean to others, like you said, I think it's important to take a step back and question, why is that? And so I often talk to students, if somebody's not treating them nicely or being mean to them, oftentimes it has more to do with that individual than anything that you've done or anything you are. And so maybe it's highlighting some of their own desires or weaknesses, and it's kind of a defense mechanism to kind of put the other person down.
Okay. So thank you so much for joining us today. It was really great to hear insights.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course.